studying the book, because this is the specific directions on recovery from a hopeless condition of mind and body. The big book is the treasure testimony of what people did and what happened to them. And if you want what they have, if you do what they did, you'll have what they had. And so if you don't want what they have, keep doing what you're doing. And when you're sick of what you have, maybe you'll do what they have. Now, if anybody understood that, good. I'd like to first pray, God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Open my mind to your truth. I want to thank you for giving me the ability to do these meetings and carry the message. Open all our minds tonight so that we can hear the message and the words. Amen. On Saturday and Sunday, I will be in grandfathering. And so we're going to have two guest speakers. They're from, where are they from? Vancouver and Toronto. I don't know. Stu and Grady are going to do the meeting, and it'll be great. Be sure to come. I'll be back for next Wednesday. When I come back on Saturday, we're looking at how to make amends, how we deal with those complicated issues. And so we're on pages, I think, 78 of the big book on Saturday morning. Sunday night, we finished Doctor's Opinion, I believe. Not finished, but we covered the most important pages on what is our problem. And so we'll be finishing Doctor's Opinion when I come back the following Sunday. So we're at, that's where we are in the big book. And on tonight, we're on page 62 of the big book. So if you come to three meetings, you'll be at three different parts of the book. We're actually on step three. And step three, I'm going to read it because some people don't know what the steps are that they're doing. It's made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. I'm making a decision in step three. Now, why would I make a decision in step three to turn my life and thinking over to the care of God? Well, because step one told me that I can't manage my life. Anybody else have that problem? Not only could I not manage my life, but I managed it very badly. And I got a card in the mail from God which said, "You have completely screwed up your life. Fire yourself." Anybody else get that card? Here's the problem. I wish I'd gotten it 10 years sooner, maybe 20. And I also realized in step one that I couldn't quit drinking on my own power. Anybody else have that problem? I was powerless over alcohol, and I had no power to manage my life. And I don't know about you, but I had hit the point of complete surrender. I had given up. Things were caving in on me, and as soon as I gave up, I felt better. I don't know what's that all about, but it says it in the big book. And I was surrendered. Anybody else surrendered? I didn't wake up one day and say, "I'm going to give up." The guns were all pointed at me, but they had been pointed, I think, for quite a while before I realized I was surrendered. And it was a moment of grace. To me, that's a gift from God. And anybody who gets that moment, I hope you go with it and do everything you can because it's a gift. Some people get the moment, but it doesn't last very long. And then they're back in their hopeless condition of mind and body. So then I was willing to believe that there was a power that could help me. Why? Because I had no power on my own to fix the problem. So now we're deciding that we want to turn our will and our lives over to a power greater than me. And we're going to get a new manager. Anybody think that's a good idea? So that's the background for page 62. And I'm going to review a little. I got permission. And on 62, we covered these two paragraphs last week. And I think it's going to be up on the site. Either it's up on the site or it's going to be up tomorrow. Selfishness, self-centered, that we think is the root of our troubles. It's not them, it was me. We went through that. Anybody agree with that? I was never in control of my life. I was driven by 100 forms of fear. Fear dominated my life. Anybody else have that? I thought I was making decisions. I thought I was in control, but fear drove me. Fear of not being good enough, fear of not getting what I want. Self-delusion, what was my delusion? That I could wrest satisfaction, happiness out of the world if I could manage well. That got me a wristband. I had self-pity. I stepped on the toes of others and they retaliated. People would retaliate and I wouldn't know why. And I couldn't see what I was doing. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but I invariably found that at some time in the past I've made decisions based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. I still see that. I look back on my life, I'll see things. Things will come into my mind and I'll see things that I did and decisions I made. You never get over that. And the more you're sober, the more you see. And that's, it keeps you grounded. It keeps you grounded to keep doing the deal. So my troubles, I think, are basically my own making. Some people say that's the greatest line in the big book, because if it's my fault and my problem, I can fix me. I can't fix them. If my troubles are because of him or her, I'm screwed because I can't fix them. But I can change myself. So the rest of this, the steps is, my troubles are basically by of making. They arise out of me. I'm going to change me. But the rest of the paragraph tells me that I can't change me. I have to have God change me, but I have to let him. There's a big difference there. This isn't a program that I'm working and God's going to help me. This is a program where God does the work, has all the power, but I let him work. Does that make sense? I was self-will run riot, an extreme example. Anybody see that in themselves? Everybody has self-will, but we were self-will run riot, an extreme example. Now, if you want to see an extreme example of self-will run riot among alcoholics, go to a business meeting or one of those district meetings or one of those kind of things where alcoholics are getting together trying to decide something. And I thought that was funny. Nobody else laughed. It's an extreme example of self-will. And what does that mean? It means that we ran our lives to fix the world, and when we did it, we didn't like the way it was. And we didn't like it and we didn't feel good and then we drank over that. See the relation between self-will run riot and alcohol. Alcoholism is self-will run riot. Alcohol was the solution for my alcoholism to fix the way I felt. You have to see that. Alcohol is not the problem. Alcohol was the solution. Now, it's a problem for alcoholics when you drink because we can't control how much we drink, right? Now, anything else that I take or think will fix myself, will run riot, I can become addicted to. And remember, alcoholics have alcohol addiction, but people who have extreme self will run riot can get addicted to a lot of things if it fixes that. It says, I usually didn't think so. That's a key line. I didn't see it. I didn't see that. I didn't see that till I came here, and I didn't see it for a while. It took a while because I didn't have anybody go through the book with me when I came here. I went to a lot of meetings, but I didn't have anybody take me through the book. I read it by myself, but I didn't understand it. It all sounded good, but it didn't come alive. And then until I listened to Joe and Charlie, and then I said, wow, where has this been? And so that changed my life. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make the book come alive so we can see it. So it says above everything. I don't know anything that's above everything. Do you? I must be rid of this selfishness. I have to be rid of this above everything. So this is the deal. Now in Bill's story, I'm not going to go back to the page, But he goes through the steps, and he says, he promised that when he did these things, he would have a way of life that answered all of his problems. And they said, he said, simple but not easy, a price has to be paid, the destruction of my self-centeredness. And so the steps from beginning with 3 and 3 through 11 is the destruction of our self-centeredness. And step 12 is where we are helping others, so we're out of self and we're practicing the principles in all our affairs. So it says, I must be rid of it. And it says, I must, or it's going to kill me. Anybody believe that? Now, everybody believes that, but then they don't want to do the 4-step. So they must not believe it, you see. I think when a lot of people read it, it says, yeah, we must, or it's going to kill them. And it says we, but you have to see it for yourself. Now, how does your selfishness kill you? You don't wake up one day and have like a selfish poison pill and die. Selfishness kills me because when I'm selfish, I'm killed spiritually. I have no relationship with God. And when I have no relationship with God and I'm dead spiritually, alcohol becomes a solution to my problems. So there's a definite relation between your selfishness and your spiritual malady and alcohol. And if you don't treat your selfishness and you stay irritable, restless, and discontent, alcoholics drink again. Alcoholics never go out. You ever hear, he went out? I don't know where he was when he went out, but he was an alcoholic, untreated, irritable, restless, discontent when he drank. And you could be, I don't know, you could be in or out. I don't know what that means. People talk about they go out, like they're in the rooms, and then they're cured, and they leave the rooms, and they're not. We either treat our self-centeredness all the time with the steps or not. And so when we drink again, it's not because we're bad people or that guy's just stupid, he drank again. It's because he's an alcoholic and he's powerless. And his selfishness was not destroyed, and then he drank. We have to forget, we get spiritually arrogant sometimes in AA. I don't know, anybody, am I the only one? I'm the only one. Those listening to the podcast, I'm the only one in the room. But we judge other people and how they're doing and whether they're doing it right or wrong and this and that. It's so ridiculous. I mean, we're all powerless. And all we're supposed to do is seek the power together. And it says God can and will if he sought. So we're God seekers, right? That's what we're trying to do. It's not complicated. And so it says God makes that possible. It's a key line in the book. It's 4 words. It's God makes that possible. Without God, nothing's possible for the alcoholic. And it says you're either going to die or live a spiritual life, right? There's no third door. And then it says we have an illness. Now, if you're a real alcoholic, you have an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer. That's what it says. Do you believe that or not? Because if you have an illness and a spiritual, and you don't need a spiritual illness to conquer it, just don't drink. You don't need to stay here and do this. But I guarantee if you do the steps, your life will be better, whether you're a real alcoholic or not. But if you're a real alcoholic, you must have a spiritual change, a spiritual relationship with God, or else you're not going to make it. And it says, I can't get rid of self without his aid. I can't do it. Anybody wake up and say, I'm going to try harder today. I'm not going to get pissed off. I'm not going to get upset. I'm going to get along with everybody. How long does that last? 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, 3. You might do it a day, but it's hard. It's hard. And I had moral and philosophical convictions galore. What's wrong with having moral and philosophical convictions? They're mine. And they may not be God's. You get it? And so it says, I can't reduce my self-centeredness by wishing or trying my own power. It's just like I could not quit drinking on my own power, could I? I couldn't. And you can't reduce your self-centeredness. Now notice, we're not talking about alcohol at all after we get to page 60. It's not mentioned. Alcohol is not mentioned. We're talking about the illness that we have, which is a spiritual illness, a self-centered life, of separated from God. Now, where do you find this self-centered world where you're separated from God? How do we get there? In our minds. That's we created that world. And so we lived outside of the real world. We lived in a world where, I don't know about you, but I was in control. I was judging everything, running everything, working so hard to manage the world. But that isn't the real world. That's the world I created. So I have to uncreate that world and have a new world come in, the real world with God in the world, everybody in it. Does this make sense? And in that world, God runs the show. So we're getting ready for the next paragraph. So I had to have God's help. God has all power. He has perfect help. Now, why don't some people want God's help? Because it's going to be perfect help. And they don't want to get rid of everything that's going on. You know, they don't say it that way. And it says, so this is the how and why of it. We're finally on page 62. We've paid 62 pages of Doctor's Opinion to get down to the beginning of the real work of the steps. First, I had to quit playing God. Anybody do that? Anybody do it today? Yep. We do it all the time, and we have to quit all the time. Step 10 is where we watch all day when we're playing God, and we do. We ask once God at once to remove whatever our selfishness or fear or dishonesty or inconsideration is cropping up, right? But now we're starting the steps for the first time. I have to quit playing God. Why? It doesn't work. And it didn't work, and it took me a while to get this. You know, I've had a lot of education, but I'm not that smart. Just ask my wife. And it says, it didn't work because I wasn't God. It's subtle, but it's a powerful point. It's insane for me to try to run the world and fix everybody and everything. I'm not God. I don't have that kind of power. Ann and I talked about it today. We don't have power to do things and fix other people and things. But we tried. Anybody try? And it says, I'm going to make a decision now. And this is an important decision. It's going to change my life. Now, I'm going to give you a hint. This isn't like a one-time decision and then everything's perfect. This is a decision I have to make every morning, all day, every night, for the rest of my life. I have to decide that hereafter in this drama of life, now, drama is an exciting, emotional, or unexpected series of events and circumstances. Now, where was the drama of my life? In my mind. It was all in here. Anybody else have drama in here? And in the drama of life, God's going to be my director. I don't want to direct my life anymore. I don't want him to run the drama in my life. I don't want to run the drama in my life. In fact, once God becomes the director, the drama goes way down. It goes way down. And you don't have drama anymore. You just have circumstances. Now, when I came in here, I had drama. Today, I have circumstances. There's a big difference. God's going to be my director. Anybody think that's a good idea? Now, this corporation only has one director. Okay? And the other thing they didn't put in the big book, we're going to have to rewrite it. It says, God's going to be my director. It does not need my help. We should put that in there. I'm going to call New York. He is the principal. We are his agents. He writes the policies, not me. And I like this. He's the father, and we are his children. And I wrote, all of us. We're all God's kids. And you learn that in the fourth step when you look at your resentment. We're all God's kids. We all have our personality and our issues. And fathers take care of their children. And that's a spiritual thing. It's in it's in Scripture. It's the basis. We have a Father. He's available to all of us. We're all his children. We say the Lord's Prayer every and the end of any meeting. How does it start? Our Father, right? We all have a Father, and He's there for all of us. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we passed the freedom. Now, I had those cards that I made that I don't think anybody liked, but it showed the world of my alcoholism, and then it showed the world of the spirit. And we're building an arch to move from this world I've created in my head to the real world where God's the director. And this arch, once we pass through it, we're not in the bondage of self anymore. You think that's a good idea? So the arch has a foundation to the arch, and it's called willingness. That's step one. If you haven't taken step one, you're not completely defeated. You're not completely willing. This arch is not going to make it. In fact, if you haven't taken a complete step one, you never build the arch. It never happens. And then the keystone of the arch, the cornerstone, is the step two, where it says, are you willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity? Are you willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself that can help you? And that if you have complete willingness, now you have the foundation, you have the cornerstone. Now the keystone of the arch, and you have to have a keystone or the arch won't stay up, is the idea that God's going to be the director. And when you finish the steps and you pass through the arch, you're in the world of the spirit, and you're on page 84 in the 10th step, and it says you've all those promises that we read at every meeting have come true for you. And then step 10 is how you stay through the arch, because you do all the steps all day long, 10 and 11. And if you do that, you never have to be in the bondage of self again. You never have to be back where you were when you started. And you certainly don't have to drink. You have a power in your life that can keep you from drinking. Isn't that great stuff? And the arch through which we pass to freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom from the bondage of living self-centered. So you're no longer an extreme example of self will run riot. Now, if you are, you better rebuild the arch. Right? And if you haven't changed, then you haven't done it. I guarantee if you do this, you will change. It's absolutely 100%. And you don't get perfect, so you have to keep changing all the time. It's a constant, you're constantly working to stay through the arch. So here are the third step promises and also the contract with God. And if you want, you can write your contract with God in the back of your big book tonight. So when you take this position that God is your director, right? Sincerely take it. All sorts of remarkable things are going to follow. One, you have a new employer. Any of you go to work during the day? Tell everybody tomorrow you work for God. It's true. I said that at work one day. They looked at me. I said, listen, I don't work for those people over there. I work for God. I got a few looks. But you know what? It helped calm me down. I don't work for me anymore. I work for God. And when you have God as your employer, that's a pretty good person to work for, isn't it? Now, being all powerful, everybody agree God's all powerful. He provided what I need if I keep close to Him and perform His work well. So here's your contract. God, you're my new employer. And my job in the contract is to stay close to you, God, and do your work well. That's it. And then God will give me, His job is to give me everything I need. And also worry. God has worry from now on. Anybody worry here? Anybody worry a lot? That's God's job now. It's not yours. He's in charge. All you have to do is stay close to Him and perform His work well. Now here's the question. How do I stay close to God and do His work well? I live in the steps. I pray, I meditate, I inventory all the time. I do steps 4 through 9, and I live in step 10 and 11. And I work with others and carry the message. If you do that, you'll have everything you need. And then those promises that are read every meeting, we don't read them here because people think they have, you get them after 30 days. Those are the promises that come when you stay close to God and you do His work well. And they're good promises. Also, when you stay close to God, you do His work well, guess what? You're in a position of neutrality to alcohol. The problem has been removed, page 85, you're recovered. And you're in a position of neutrality towards alcohol and other things. And then you have a fit spiritual condition. So that's a good contract, isn't it? And it's one that we can all follow through. But you can't do a half measures contract. You won't get it. Have to give 100% to staying close to God and doing His work well. And how do you know what His work is? Well, that's what, in step 11, we improve our conscious contact by prayer and meditation, only knowledge of His will for me every day and the power to carry that out. It says, established on such a footing, I become less interested in myself, my little plans and design. So if my footing is that God's my new employer and He's going to be my director and I stay close to Him and perform His work well, I'm going to be less interested in myself, my little plans and designs. I'm destroying my self-centeredness. You see how that works? I'm becoming interested in seeing what I could contribute to life. I'm going to feel new power flow in. I'm going to have peace of mind. I'm going to face life successfully. I'm going to be conscious of God's presence. I'm going to lose my fear of today and tomorrow. I'm going to be reborn. So the promises are that I'm going to be less interested in myself and my little plans, one. Two, I'm going to be interested in contributing to life. Three, I'm going to have new power flow in. Four, I'm going to have peace of mind. Five, I'm going to discover I can face life successfully. Six, I'm going to start to become conscious of God's presence. I'm beginning my relationship with God right now. And that's what it's all about, right? And I'm going to lose my fear of today and tomorrow and hereafter, and I'm going to be reborn. I'm going to have a complete change spiritually. That's what reborn means. So now we're at step three. This is good information, isn't it? It's powerful stuff. So now we're going to do the third step prayer. It says we're now at step three, and everybody knows the third step prayer, right? Yep. Anybody say it? Yep. Everybody like it. Did you think well before taking this step? Look at the end of the paragraph. I'm going to think well before taking this step, making sure I'm ready, that I could at last abandon myself utterly to Him. Think about that. This decision is not going to work if I'm not giving up completely. I'm giving unconditional surrender to God now. Now, I don't have the power right now to follow through on it on my own at all. But as I work the steps, I start with step four, and I start down this path, I get more power from God to do this. You get it? In the beginning, it's like when anybody train to like for a sport or something, when you start out, you're out of shape, right? If you're going to run a marathon, you're not going to run 26 miles the first day, right? So spiritually, we are very out of shape when we come to AA. And we start the spiritual process, and we start to get stronger spiritually. And the more you do it, the stronger you get. But this is the beginning. You can't hold anything back. You can't have any conditions on your surrender, because those conditions will kill you. So you do it the best you can. We do it the best you can, just in your own mind. Now, you know how you're ready, you know when you're doing it, when you're ready to do it? You wake up in the morning and you pray the first thing. And you ask God to help you, right? And then you do it all day, and at night, you thank God for helping you. And the instructions on what we do in the morning and the evening are on pages 84 to 88, which you can start to read anytime. And so we're now at step three. Is everybody ready to abandon themselves completely to them? All right, now you'll wake up in the morning and you'll pray and you'll be 100% completely abandoned to God. okay? At 10 o'clock, you'll have some fear. What does that mean? You're managing that area of your life. So you have to stop and you have to say, I'm going to give this to you, God, and you're going to abandon yourself to God again. Let's say you get angry at 11 o'clock. Somebody bothers you. Anybody get people bother you anymore? Somebody bothers you. You stop. You say, God, I'm bothered because I'm judging. I'm running the world. God, you're my director. Save me from being angry. Keep me from judging. You do it all the time. So the idea to completely abandon has to be followed through by the action. Now, if you're new, you don't know how to do it. So I suggest you start doing step four right away, which guess what is what they say right after the prayer. They say next and at once. And we'll start do that next week. I'm just going to read the prayer real quickly. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. We're now at step three. And you can say any third step prayer you want. Dr. Bob had a third step prayer on the bed of his house that he wrote that's really good. You can get it on the internet. You can say any prayer you want. If you have scriptures you want to pray, whatever, as long as the idea is clear that you're given up completely and you need his perfect help. So it says, I'm going to offer myself to thee. Now, I've heard people say, I don't like the prayer because I don't like thee. Now, is that alcoholic or not? You're dying. You're completely dying. You don't like the word. I don't know how many times I've heard that. Jessica's going, yes, right. You've heard that. Yeah, people say, I don't like thee. Well, change your mind.
To you.
Yeah, but it's alcoholism, right? Old ideas. I offer myself to thee, all of myself, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Now, a lot of people don't like that because he may send me to Africa as a missionary. I don't think that's the intent of this prayer. The intent of this prayer is that I'm done running the show. I want you to change my personality. I don't want to be in charge anymore. Relieve me of the bondage, a state of being a slave to myself. Now, they could have put sin in there, but they didn't because then nobody would read the book. You know, they kept certain words out of it. But bondage itself is pretty good, I think. I think it says the picture. I'm in bondage to what I think. And I'm in bondage to what I think is right. Now, does anybody remember we read old ideas? We have to let go of them absolutely, or the result is nil. Nil, by the way, is not good. All right, the old ideas that you have to hold on to, you have to let go of, is this bondage to your thinking. Now, the process of relieving yourself of the bondage is in the fourth step when you see your thinking and how you are in bondage to this insane thinking that caused all these fears and angers and you harmed other people. And why? The only reason you would be relieved of bondage itself is not to get a better job or make more money so you can better do his will. The whole purpose of our program now is to turn ourselves away from us, how we can serve God and others. Remember, you work for him now. Take away my difficulties, and difficulties is whatever you think your difficulties are at the moment. It could be your character defects, right? It could be whatever you're worrying about, whatever is controlling you. You don't want it to have power over you want. So you're actually asking God to take it away. Take it away. And it's not fix it, just take it away. So that victory over them may bear witness, which is testimony, to those I would help of your power, love, and way of life. May I do thy will always. And there's no amen. Some people say because the amen's after step seven, and that they meant this all as a prayer. I don't know. It's not in there. That sounds good, because what they're saying is you have God with you while you're doing your fourth, fifth, and sixth, and seventh step. So I went over a little long, but this is good stuff, right? Now, next week, we're going to look and go right into the step four, tentatively. Thank you.